John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick coming at you from the east side today, as has been the case for a good while now. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe out today and tomorrow, taking a little long weekend as they customarily do around this time of the year. And I'm sure a lot of you, as we get more and more clarity, I guess, on what the rest of the summer is going to hold. Maybe you're planning on some vacations that you weren't ready to do before. We're trying to sort that out here. But during the summer, as we continue to, hopefully, fingers crossed, count down to some action on the field or on the ice or in the gym in the coming weeks, we will be ready for you once again with some excellent sports talk. Today, we're going to have some great conversations on a various number of topics. So today I've got Marquise Munson. He comes around the glass. He has been behind the glass in the studio for a good while. Today he co-hosts with me, and so we're excited to have him. And we've got Elijah Campbell back with us today. He will be running the show from behind the glass. We've got a great team out at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, where the 102.5 The Game studios are. What's up, guys?
What's up, Willie? I feel like I got called up. Like, this is like a call-up for me.
You got the call-up.
I got the call-up. I'm a G League player on a 10-day contract right now. Now, I just have to play like it, of course. But, look, I'm excited, man. It's funny that, you know, these guys are taking a vacation, because now I have to start thinking about my own vacation. And because my 30th birthday is this year in August. But, see, the problem is all these sports are coming back. And it's around the time in August, so do I really want to just go take a vacation with all this sports going on for my 30th, or should I just, you know, just hang tight and just hang out and watch a lot of sports that I've been missing for 4 or 5 months?
It's the sports. Well, you want to do that.
Yeah, it's the sports. It's definitely the sports.
For sure.
The Lakers win a championship, that's a good birthday present for me.
That's the ideal birthday present. Yeah, it's nice. I just want to go up with this out there. It's nice to be in the studio with another human being. Me and Marquise are separated by glass, but this is the first time I think I have been in this studio with another person with a pulse in about 3 months doing a show.
I feel like we were ahead of our time, because when you go to the bank or you go to a hotel, you go to many stores now, they've got the plexiglass separating the person at the, you know, behind the desk from the customer coming in. So I feel like, you know, we've had that for a good while now. So you guys are right at home, and we were ahead of the curve there.
Absolutely. We're ahead of the curve. Everybody's following our guidelines, radio guidelines. That's what everybody's following right now. We have a glass in between us. This is like the first, maybe second time somebody's been in the studio that I'm sitting in. So it feels good.
Yeah, it's going to be normal. Wherever you go, it seems like, and that's a smart thing. We've got to adjust, right? That's what's going on. And speaking
Absolutely.
Of that, some excellent news from the mayor this morning, just, you know, with his address that he's been doing at around 9:30 Central on most days here. He announced that Monday, Davidson County reopening to phase 3. So that is the next step. I know we're probably about a week or two after we hoped we would get there, but we got there. So that is exciting. So we can go over some of the things that will change for the better as we open things up in phase 3. But I'm told Elijah still hasn't gotten into the times for phase 2, Marquise. He hasn't gotten a haircut since all of this.
He's going with the long-haired look. I'm looking at him right now, and I'm just like, man, I want to like hand him my barber's card real quick. Be like, hey, man, set up an appointment. My guy will take care of you, man. Trust me, you got to set up an appointment.
Hey, the quarantine hair is Adam Morrison levels right now. That's exactly what's going on here.
He does look like Adam Morrison. Hopefully he doesn't play like him, but he definitely does look
college
like
Adam Morrison.
The college Adam Morrison was exciting.
Hey,
he could play.
That's
it just didn't quite translate to the next level.
Yeah, that's 28 points a game in like 35 minutes at college. Adam Morrison was. He could get buckets. It's just getting drafted by Michael Jordan has been a curse by a lot of guys.
I will say this. Adam Morrison had two championships before LeBron James. I'm just saying.
That is true.
Even though he wore a suit during half of the time though, those championships
he's got
two championships.
He's got two rings. He's got as many rings as Kevin Durant. He's got two.
It's a true fact. That is a true fact right there. We've got a lot that we're going to discuss on the show today. The twists and turns of Major League Baseball. We'll get the latest from one of the great writers in baseball, and Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. That's coming up at 10:15. He wrote a piece last night about the latest proposal, the one-on-one meeting between the commissioner and Tony Clark. This has been different, right? This is progress, but they're still not out of the woods yet. But they look like they actually made some headway last night, but there are still plenty of skeptics out there. We'll get Tyler's take. He wrote about it for the New York Times last night, and of course, it's ever-changing. But since we got off the air yesterday, there was a move in the right direction. We will talk to Joe Rexroad today at 12:30 about an article he wrote about the legendary sports writer Grantland Rice and some of his writings. And how do we look at that in the historical context, especially today when we're examining race relations and where to go from here? What can we learn from history? Really good piece by Joe Rexroad that I think you'll enjoy if you read it, especially. But if you haven't, you'll enjoy his perspective on it at 12:30. Pete Pranica, my counterpart, the play-by-play TV man for the Memphis Grizzlies, will join us at noon as the NBA continues to try to maneuver through and get to Orlando and start playing basketball again in the next month and a half or so as they prepare for that. We'll talk about where the Grizzlies stand and all of that. So we've got a lot of good things coming. That's just a couple of things that we've got going today. But let's talk quickly about phase three and what that means. So that means three quarters capacity for the retail stores and commercial businesses. Which is very, very important. I know for restaurants, right, it's hard economically to make it work with half capacity. And the restaurants that I've seen, you know, they've been sectioning off the tables. You know, they've got the plexiglass up like we were talking about in a lot of cases. So one of the things that I look at that, you know, employees screen daily. They got to wear the masks. We have to all keep wearing the mask. And especially when we're inside, when we're leaving home, when you're going into a place with a lot of people around you, please wear the mask. It's important. If we're going to get to phase four, that's going to be a critical thing. Personal gatherings, 25 people or fewer. And, you know, if you want to do it, do it. But, you know, honestly, if you don't have to, there's no reason you have to sit there and say, well, now let's get 25 people over there. If you do, though, be smart about it. The exercise, the high touch and close contact businesses, hair and nail salons, Elijah, they may continue to operate at half capacity. Summer camps back on now. That's a good thing. So maybe some more things for the kids to do, provided the social distancing can be maintained at these things. And a lot of these other things that little things. But guys, we're moving forward. The biggest thing that I think about is, you know, the virus is still out there. This is a great thing. It's a step-by-step process. But we've got to be smart, right? Keep doing the smart things because only that is going to get us to phase four.
Absolutely. And I think we've learned that. Like, I had my whole thing, you know, before we got into phase three, where I was not going to go anywhere until we got into phase two. Like, and obviously, a lot of that had to do with me not having a haircut and me not wanting to go in public, you know, looking like, you know, how I looked at the time with an afro and a beard. But, you know, I had a goal of like, look, phase two, that's when I'm going to go out. That's when, you know, I'll start to implement myself back into society, but, you know, but I'm still cautious and I still do things. Even though I moved into that phase two mindset, I still am cautious about everything, you know, still wearing my mask, especially when you're going to the grocery store, you know, or anywhere for that matter. And, you know, going to restaurants and keeping my distance from, you know, other tables. And they've been doing a good job at that. And just, you know, still not being around that many people. And, you know, that's the step that we need to make to get into the right direction. I've noticed, like, I'm doing things a lot differently than I normally have. And that's, I think, the mindset that a lot of people will have to have in order for us to move forward and progress and to get to phase four and get to phase five is, you know, you're just going to have to adapt your lifestyle. I'm used to going out with a bunch of friends and going out to eat and, you know, hanging out at a house in a closed capacity spot and with no mask on and, you know, and going to a grocery store with no mask on. And, you know, I'm used to those things, but sometimes you just have to adjust. And that's one thing that I've learned throughout this process. And I think if everybody has that mindset of, hey, we have to adjust in order to get to where we want to be. But, you know, I've gotten used to it by now. I've gotten used to wearing my mask. It's not even like a big thing anymore. If I forget my mask, I got to go back and go get it. But it's just not a big deal anymore to me. And I've just had to adjust. And hopefully everybody else is doing the same.
Yeah, it's certainly an adjustment, and I feel like we're at least getting better at it, and that you don't move into phase three if you're not getting a little better at making that adjustment. And like Willie said before, you know, there's a new normal we all have to adjust to as well, and I think getting be able to move into phase three is, I guess, a sign that we've kind of adapted a little better to the new normal that we're forced to live with.
But we also have to also remember the reality that the cases are continuing to go up, right? In a lot of places at a pretty high level. So we know that the more activity we have, the more infection can spread. And so that's why it's even more important. The more that we do, the more we take the precautions of making sure your hands are clean, making sure you're wearing the mask, doing all of those things that are recommended.
Absolutely.
So if we want to have these things, we have to be very aware of that. And honestly, there need to be consequences for people and businesses especially that are not adhering to this.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't want to go into a place that people are ignoring it.
If you know,
it's not joke about it. Let's not say, oh, you know, those people, they, you know, it's funny how that nobody was wearing a mask. Well, nobody should go into that business. Like, I've seen a lot of pieces on different news programs, and what I like to see is the innovation, as you called it, the adaptation, where these businesses want to instill confidence in you that you can come in there. And so when people are wearing masks, when they're setting the example, that gives me more confidence that, yeah, I want to help that business. That's where I want to be able to go. A hotel, a restaurant, a bar at half capacity. You have to adhere to it. And there's got to be people policing that, right? There's got to be sanctions, because those businesses that aren't doing it, they're going to ruin it for everybody else who's trying to do it right.
Absolutely. And this is a perfect example. So I go to two different grocery stores. I'm not going to name them, but it's grocery store A. I go in there with a mask, and this grocery store A was when I text you guys and said, hey, I'm counting the number of people that are in this store without a mask, and I lost count at like 15. And store A obviously doesn't have those restrictions. Now, store B, however, you have to line up to get into the store. They only let you only allow so many people in that store at that one time. And you have to line up outside of that store in order to get in. And you have to wear your mask. They give you an option of whether to wear the mask or not. But they tell you it's encouraged to wear the mask. So it just all depends on how businesses are being structured. I'm not going to go into a bar with over capacity of people that looks like a normal night on in Nashville. I'm not going to do that during this day and age, because I have family, I have grandmothers, and I have, you know, grandpa and older family members who, regardless, I don't want to, you know, get them sick from going out to a bar and someone getting me sick, and I got to be around them. So, and vice versa, like, I want to wear a mask to protect the person that I'm possibly around. And that's another thing that people don't, you know, take into consideration. You're not wearing the mask just for you, you know, to protect yourself. You're also protecting the people that are around you as well. So I think if everybody has that mindset, we can keep moving this forward. Let's not get into a situation where we were in phase two, and guess what? We got to reset phase two because we weren't following the proper guidelines because we were so excited to get out of phase one. I think we just need to be cautious of what we're doing and continually doing what we're doing to get into phase three. And I think if we do that, we can move this forward and continue to move this forward and continue to help our businesses, local businesses especially, to get back on track.
With that said, let's move forward with our show. Well said, Marquise. Tyler Koeppner coming up from the New York Times, Major League Baseball writer. And that is coming your way in the next segment. Adam Vingan at 11 talking Predators. So we've got a lot going on the show today. Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Ah, yes, if you've been to any ballpark in your life, you've probably heard this song, and usually it gets good vibes going. Now we're still a little bit cautious before we get really enthusiastic. I allowed myself to get a little more enthusiastic that baseball has gotten through the fog here, but maybe not so fast. There's some things going on. Hopefully today they'll actually have some discussions and work through it. But to help spell it all out for us, Tyler Kepner from the New York Times, he has been writing about this and following this through the get-go. And Tyler, I know you've got to be exhausted covering this because it just makes you want to tear your hair out if you have any left. And I've got very little left, but it's just we're all at wit's end with this. But, you know, I read last night and then you had to amend your article today. I guess Tony Clark doesn't quite have as much pull from his players as maybe Rob Manfred thought he did when they left that meeting yesterday. But tell us where these things are right now.
Well, yeah, thanks for having me on. It's, you know, it's just one of these situations where they can't even agree on what they've talked about. You know, so Manfred comes out yesterday and issues this very hopeful statement that he and Clark left this meeting in Phoenix, you know, hands held together and agreeing on a lot of great stuff. But then, you know, the union says, wait, that wasn't an agreement. That was just a proposal. And, you know, to suggest that we left that with an agreement is totally wrong. So, you know, they still don't trust each other. There's still a lot of bitterness and acrimony. And what I don't know yet is, you know, what exactly the union wants. I guess it's more games because more games means more money. But, you know, we kept hearing tell us when and where. And now, you know, MLB has said, all right, 60 games, here we go. And I guess that's not enough.
Do you think at least the threat of the grievance, we feel better about that going away? I think that was part of what they discussed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if they come to a mutually agreed upon, you know, plan going forward, then there, you know, grievances as part of that, you know, because it's all a lot of it's just procedural stuff. A lot of it's like, you know, legal interpretations of the March agreement, which they still don't really agree on. But yeah, I mean, you know, certainly that was the big stumbling block the other night when Manfred was talking about how he's not confident there's going to be a season because they were really scared of walking into a trap from the union, basically, where they would have to, you know, stage a season and then immediately be hit with a lawsuit they would probably lose.
Do you think we'll hear from Tony Clark today? How the ball is in the players' court. Would that be fair?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, Rob has The MLB leader, Rob Manfred, has said on the record that he is going to that he is in favor of this plan, and we haven't heard that from the union. I talked to some union people last night, but I tried to get you know, Tony to talk on the record, and he wouldn't. So, you know, we still haven't really heard from Tony about Tony's on the record interpretation of what happened and what he thinks of the deal. So that's a big part that's unanswered here, as to, you know, what was his impression of the meeting the other night with Manfred, and then what are his recommendations, and if there's some, you know, any dissension in the ranks, or if the players are unified. You know, last night he was taking this proposal to the players and asking them, you know, for their thoughts individually on it. But, you know, they really wanted to pump the brakes because they don't think they agreed to anything, and they view it as a proposal that they're taking their membership and going from there.
Well, we can talk about all the details for a long time, but I think for the most part, the public is just done with hearing it. They just want to know, when do you start playing, and let's work this out and get it going. But Tyler, I think the big picture is the ramifications of what's coming in the next few years with the game. I mean, you and I are in this simulated baseball league that we've referred to on our show from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where we have this great history. We have this deep love of the game where we care. You have a team from 1989. You're leading our entire league in batting average. You've got guys like Will Clark on your team and Wade Boggs. I've got the lowest hitting lineup in the league right now from 1984 with guys like Eddie Murray and Cal Ripken. But my point is that there's a smaller and smaller group of people that just have that deep love of the history, that we're just attached to the game. And sometimes I think baseball just completely loses that when they have discussions like this at a time like this.
Yeah, I mean, baseball, you know, my dad actually, 74, he sent me an article he saw today that said, you know, the age of the average baseball fan is now 57 years old, you know, and in 2000 it was like 52 or something. So, like, it keeps, you know, the diehardest of diehard fans keep getting older and older. And then, you know, there's guys like us in our 40s who were raised in the 80s and early 90s and stuff, and you know, when baseball was, pre-strike era. And so, you know, the industry has been doing well. I mean, you know, they always love to brag about how it's a $10 or $11 billion industry, and, you know, but we're seeing a steady downtick in attendance from year to year. And even though the networks, bid a lot of money, for the rights to baseball, the ratings are not nearly what they used to be. They trail other sports too. So yeah, there's a lot of big picture issues, and I feel like baseball continually and frustratingly loses sight of the long-term damage of these short-term decisions. I mean, the minor leagues, you know, like, I mean, you were what round were you? 25th or something?
25th round.
I mean, like, you know, and now there's not going to be this year was a 5-round draft. In the future, apparently it's going to be like 20. So you're just going to lose these people who, you know, come into the game. And as Dayton Moore of the Royals has said, you know, maybe they don't make the big leagues, but they spread the game after they leave. And they just sort of grow it. And I worry that we're not growing the game because there's such a short-sighted view of, of a lot of these owners.
I really worry about that, and I also worry about the lack of investment in getting the even younger people to play, because what we see now, and Tyler, you're probably well aware of this, but you know how travel baseball has kind of left a lot of people behind at an earlier age. They stop playing. This happens in a lot of sports, but it's so important for baseball because you lose people that otherwise could stay involved with the game, stay attached with the game.
Right.
Until they're more in high school, and now there's less people playing, and therefore there will be less people that want to, you know, watch baseball and things like that. So that thinking has got to be there at a higher level, but they can't get to that because they're so worried about whether they're going to get paid for 60 games or 66 games.
Yeah, it really is, and you know, I mean, that's a whole other issue, but you know how much it costs to play this game at a high level. You know, in the amateur ranks, that drives away a lot of people from it, you know, 'cause they can't afford it or, you know, they just they can't latch onto that, showcase circuit. We've seen the demographics of the game, change over the years. I mean, I think the African-American, participation in Major League Baseball is way down. And I think that's had an impact, on the quality of play. And the maybe marketability or excitement that baseball generates. So it's just I love baseball, and I always will. But as I've written, you know, baseball knows that it has the diehards. You know, we're hooked. It's the next generation and growing, expanding the game that they really should be worried about. But you're right. Right now, they can't even figure out how to get back on the field. They've already blown the chance to come back on the 4th of July weekend. They're not hearing each other, and I've ripped Manfred a lot, and he deserves it. But I give him some credit for going out to see Clark face to face and really trying to push these things forward after that brinksmanship of the other night.
We're talking to Tyler Kepner of the New York Times, and I, that kind of brought me to my next question. And basically, we all saw the special on Monday where Rob Manfred went on and he said he has no confidence in the season starting and or baseball playing in 2020 after 5 days earlier saying that he was confident in the season starting. And he got a lot of heat for that, obviously, but I'm wondering how come we're not pointing the finger at Tony Clark or some of these owners, because it seems like Rob Manfred's the one out here taking the bullets, and yet everybody else is kind of, you know, throwing their hands up and let Rob Manfred take them. But it's not all his fault, even though some of his comments have, you know, contradicted himself.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think especially now, you know, it's really, you know, Tony's turn, I think, to live up to his words. You know, like we had Manfred saying 100% we're going to have a season, and then he backs off of that, and, you know, he looks terrible. And now, you know, the rallying cry from the other night was, you know, tell us when and where. And now apparently that baseball has, now it's, you know, the players' turn to live up to their words. And I think, you know, if this goes on longer, certainly a lot of focus will be on, you know, the union's leadership. And, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around. I mean, not everybody involved in this process is going about it the right way. I think they're, you know, almost all, you know, good people who love baseball. But they haven't really understood that this is a different situation than anything else. It's not a collective bargaining, session. It should just be a one-off to try to get baseball back for the mutual benefit of both. And I think they're just looking at their own, you know, self-interest a little too much. And they don't have that, you know, sort of common ground of, you know, the greater good. It's hard to expect that, I guess, but, you know, here we are. I mean, the people I feel deserve the most blame are the hardline owners who just don't want to see, because as far as I know, you know, players all want to play, and most owners want to play, and Manfred wants to play. But there are some owners who just think, like, this is going to cost me more money to stage games than to just bang the season. And those guys, I mean, you know, I just got no time for them. I would name them if I could confirm them, but I know they're out there.
Yeah, and when I see in other leagues, now I see with the NBA and Adam Silver, and, you know, his first job and duty was to fire an owner, you know, a month in his job. And then we see with Gary Bettman in NHL, we've seen Roger Goodell in the last couple weeks kind of make that strive to start listening to their players more. And I feel like this could really have a long-term effect on the relationship between Rob Manfred and his players. Do you think so?
Yeah, I think it already has. I mean, the players don't get the sense that that Manfred really respects them, or maybe even they question how much he loves the game, which was never a doubt with Bud Selig. You know, baseball was in his blood. You know, and I think baseball players don't get the sense that Rob you know, really maybe appreciates them or honors them the way they want to be recognized. So that's definitely a problem. They don't trust them. They don't trust that these owners have as tough a time financially as many of them claim. They think there's a lot more money out there. And they know that the owners kind of got over on the players in the last CBA. They've seen things that, you know, like the service time manipulation and, you know, the cries about, you know, collusion, which I thought were bogus, but, you know, especially because the free agent market rebounded pretty well this past winter. But they've found a lot of things to complain about and to be unhappy with. The squeezing out of a lot of veterans from the game, the way they, you know, shuttle these kids back and forth and get a lot of production out of young players without paying them much. There's a lot of issues the union has with Rob Manfred and the current administration. And, you know, even if we have a season this year, the future of the game is still a little perilous because of that the lack of trust that we're seeing play out in public right now.
Tyler, if it or when this season resumes, and if it is 60 games, you got some fans who, you know, would take the 60 games, obviously, and then, you know, their team win a championship and they'll accept it. But then, however, you got the other fans who are like, all this turmoil that's going on between the players and Rob Manfred, and, you know, I'm checked out of this season. So even if they do 60 games, I'm not going to accept my team winning a championship. Where do you think fans fall in line with the 60 games?
Well, I think if you like baseball, eventually, you know, you'll get over, you know, being angry or bitter at the fact that, you know, in April, May, and especially June, you know, these sides were fighting about money. Because when you really think about it, I mean, the NBA is coming back in late July. That's still roughly baseball's timeline. So all these start, I mean, let's say best case scenario, all these sports start to come back around the same time. You know, we'll go to our respective tribes. You know, if you're a baseball fan, you'll watch baseball. And I would think, if your team does well, you'd get into it. I still think that if they play a season that for the most part, fans will tune in. Everybody's starved for live, sports competition again. There's no ticket buying, you know, to measure, fans' interests. You know, you can't say like, oh, attendance is down 20% because there's no attendance at all. So I think fans, I don't know, maybe, well, I don't know what you guys think, but I think fans will have enough time, you know, a month between the negotiations. Like, let's say they make a deal now. There's still going to be another month. Let's say they make a deal in 10 minutes. Like, there's still going to be a month for everybody to get used to the fact that it's going to be a 60-game season. That means a month of promotion, a month of, you know, stories about how the Indians are going to look and how the Phillies are going to look and how the Padres are going to look. You know, like, all that stuff's going to come back again. And I think a month is a long enough run-up for fans to wrap their heads around a 60-game season.
Yeah, because, Tyler, with me, I grew up a Dodgers fan, and obviously I was excited for this season because, you know, Mookie Betts and David Price coming to the team, and – look, I would take a 60-game season. I'll take baseball in general, but I just feel like MLB has missed like a golden opportunity for growth in their game because they see all these other sports coming back with the NBA, with NHL and MLS, and you know, we thought that MLB would probably be the first one to get the stuff together, and all of a sudden they're not, and then you're possibly going to start the season, you know, in the mix of college football and possibly with the mix of the NFL, and I just feel like it's going to be hard for them to kind of get that attention back to from not the diehard fans, but fans like me who kind of check in on their favorite team and then kind of just check out.
Right. And that was, again, where they should have had a bigger picture mentality here is that, you know, let's distinguish ourselves from the rest of the pack by getting out there early 4th of July weekend, you know, living up to all of those high-minded ideals that some of us who love baseball really do believe in. You know, as corny as it sounds, like, you know, imagine if baseball was back on the 4th of July, even without fans, you know, it would still be something that we could resume as having a part of our daily lives, part of the background noise of America. I believe in that stuff, you know, for baseball fans. I still think there are more baseball fans than any other sport just based on how many dates that baseball has to sell compared to football and how bigger the stadiums are compared to the little arenas in the NBA and NHL who have half the games to sell. So in other words, I still think it's America's number one sport. And I think that's always something baseball needs to protect. And they have to take the mentality of a pitcher like Mike Mussina, right? Like when I covered Mike Mussina, he said as for his entire career, which ended with a 20-win season, for his entire career, he was worried about that kid in the minors trying to take his job. He could have all the salary, you know, all the financial security he wanted, but he's like, there's always some kid coming up trying to be better than me, trying to take my job. So if I don't constantly try to innovate and constantly try to think about how to get better, I could get passed by. And I sometimes think that baseball, yeah, that, you know, they're the national pastime and all that, but they've got to continue to think of ways to promote that and keep that. And a 4th of July return would have been amazing, would have given people that jump. And now they're just going to be, if they return at all, they're going to be right in the middle of that mix of everything else.
I'm talking to Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. And Tyler, digging through your article yesterday, one thing that I really noticed, that really caught my eye, was the possible universal implementation of the designated hitter in the National League as well until 2021. In your personal opinion, is that something that you think that we can see in baseball once that time period ends in 2022 and beyond?
Probably. I mean, I don't think that if they put it in, I don't think they'll take it out. I mean, the players have always wanted it. You know, as a union, not every player, but like as a union, they've always liked the idea, because even though teams don't necessarily have a one DH play 150 games anymore, you know, they like to move guys in and out. It's still, you know, an offensive position, and that, you know, teams can spend money on. And I think it's the union perception is that it's, you know, going to be more valuable to the players, to have, you know, more, a DH everywhere. So, yeah, so I don't think it's something, if the union, as long as the union sees it as a check mark in the, on their side of the ledger, they're not going to give it back up. So I would think that it would be here to stay. And isn't it funny that, you know, the DH or no DH has been such a huge debate since 1973. And now it seems like it's just sort of almost an afterthought, like, okay, fine, DH, wait, whatever, DH in both leagues, let's go, let's just play. Like, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, that's been a big deal for a lot of years, but, you know, we got bigger issues to think of right now, I guess.
Yeah, I hope, Tyler, in a couple of weeks we can have that discussion with gusto and have a lot of fun with it. Right now I'm still cautiously moving forward, hoping for some good news here. And so we don't want to keep you too long, because I feel like during this interview, Tony Clark may have texted you and said, I'm ready to go on the record. I'm ready to give you scoop here. But I'm also certain that you need to check your rosters and your matchups for the big matchup today that you've got with the Rain Men in our league. I think last night, Jose Oquendo got a big hit in like the 11th or 12th inning to sink you guys. So you got to come back strong today. I think it's Greg Maddux against Pascual Perez. Is that right?
Well, no, I don't have Maddux on my team. So,
Or is it Kevin Brown?
I think it's Langston's turn. He's been a little bit of a disappointment for me so far. Well, no, it's Cid Fernandez for me. He's been terrible, too. I really try to draft based on, like, opponent average, because I feel like all the hitters are good. So I just want pitchers who are really hard to hit. And my opponent's average stinks. I mean, I'm hitting like crazy. Which is awesome. I'm 8-5, but I got my first 2-game losing streak of the season, Willie, and you know, a big 4-game series with Mitch Leight. So I don't know. We got to get it done here. Sid's got to lay off the tacos and the burgers, and you know, get back on the treadmill there and get a win for us.
Yeah, Cid Fernandez, you got to watch him close. No question about it. I've got Alejandro Pena, a young Alejandro Pena, going today, 84 ERA leader in the National League against one of the several versions of Nolan Ryan we have in our league, a younger Nolan Ryan from 1972, one of his first years with the Angels. So yeah, that's my matchup at noon. So we'll be checking the box scores, I'm sure, at around 12:30 Central.
It's a very interesting sort of experiment as to who, you know, who the computer really thinks was good compared to who we thought was good and what stats translate and which don't. You know, I also took a ERA leader with a, you know, lower amount of innings in Scott Gorelt from the 80s, kind of a similar, you know, reliever slash starter guy like Alejandro Pena was. So we'll see how those guys do if that holds up in the simulated world.
Yep. Someday when we get through the fog, we'll look back on this time. How did we get through without real baseball? It's called whatifsports.com. So colleagues of mine here got me into it, and I pulled you and several other people who I know are huge baseball fans to get into this. So maybe someday we'll go back and analyze this. But in the meantime, let's just hope that Tony Clark calls you today with some good news, Tyler. Thanks a lot for coming on with us today.
All right, Phil. Thanks very much for having me.
All right. That's Tyler Kepner from the New York Times. Does a tremendous job covering Major League Baseball. He's covered the Yankees for a long time, covered the Mets for a time, is a graduate of Vanderbilt, and once upon a time was covering the Commodores for the Vanderbilt Hustler. So always appreciate his perspective. When we come back, we'll talk about where we go from here from baseball. We'll also look ahead. We've got Adam Vigan coming on at 11 o'clock. We'll talk Roman Yossi. We'll also talk about something he's written about this week, looking ahead at the Predators roster and how well it's positioned going forward, and things like, yes, the expansion draft. Seattle will be coming into the league in a couple years. Where are the Predators going with that? What might their thinking be? What are the options that they have to try to keep their roster intact as much as possible. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Willie Donick, Marquise Munson, Elijah Campbell today with Darren and Chase taking a bit of a long weekend. In fact, they just sent us a picture of their whereabouts right now. We're very jealous. I believe they're walking.
They look links. So adorable.
I guess they have matching shirts on. We'll have to ask about this on Monday when
they
get
really?
Back.
Did
What's
you
going
say
on
matching
with matching
shirts?
Shirts?
Yes, matching
matching
blue
shirts.
Matching
yeah, we're going to share this picture with you.
Oh,
it does look like they're going to a Dodger game. It really does.
They look so
or Kentucky or the Kansas City Royals. I don't know what's going on.
But Darren's making a face like, man, I have to golf with this guy. Like this guy, we're going to be here all night playing with Chase, and Chase is just like cheesing, happy. Like I'm just happy to be playing golf, man. I'm just happy. I'm gonna hit a couple trees, maybe land some in the pond, but I'm just happy to be here.
He's smiling and like he's gonna put that on the fridge.
Divots coming up. Yeah, there's gonna be some chunks out there.
I can't judge because I can't golf either. But no. I'm probably certain that I'm better than Chase at golf. But I am like what? Charles Barkley bad at golf.
Well, I'm hoping people enjoyed that discussion with Tyler Kepner. I think one thing that I've been thinking about a lot, guys, and I would love to get your perspectives because you guys are younger than me. He mentioned the average age of the baseball fan is somewhere in the mid-50s now, and that should be extremely alarming to baseball, right? And they're caught up in this, you know, this battle between the players and the owners, knowing that with this, with the economics in the country going in the direction they are, the next few years are going to be rough, right? Even if they do have fans in the stands next year, which we don't know for sure, just the after effects of all this is going to affect the economics of the game. But the foundation of the game is the biggest problem, right? They, as you heard Tyler and I kind of nerd out on this simulated league we're in on whatifsports.com, where you can crunch all the numbers and you can have a game between guys from 1985 against 2000. And, you know, we have a league where each person has a team from a certain year. It's exciting for us because we're nuts. Baseball doesn't have to worry about us. We're addicted, right? We can't get away from it. I love the game too much. I'll always be watching, but I'm not who they have to worry about, right? It's guys more in your age demographic. I don't know how much you guys played baseball growing up or enjoyed watching baseball growing up, but there's an erosion that keeps happening. And when they do things like eliminate several minor league teams and the model continues to be at the youth level, let's service the top 10% of the players and have travel ball and leave everybody else behind, that erosion only accelerates more. So the average age of the fan, and let's, you know, let's not even... we haven't even gotten into the diversity of the game and players from the inner city and RBI baseball and some of the things that are used to try to attract more and more different types of people to the game. That's been a failure the last 20 years as well. I mean, they're not seeing this, right? Their foundation could crumble. And it could be a really steep decline in another 5 to 10 years. That's my fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I mentioned it to Tyler of you're pushing basically the MLB season in the midst of college football, which is a growing sport. Everybody loves college football, especially here in the South. And you're pushing it in the middle of all these other sports that are going on that has slid you by when you could have easily just been the first one out of the gate. They could have been right up there probably with MLS, and they could have had their own spotlight. And that would have been perfect for MLB because fans in general, sports fans in general, because there's guys who and girls who have never watched a golf game or never watched NASCAR that is now getting into it. I know people who never watched UFC a day in their lives, but now all of a sudden, because it's the only sports they can get, they're watching UFC and they're enjoying it. And so UFC is getting new fans. NASCAR is getting new fans, especially with eliminating the flag. They're getting new fans. MLS is a growing sport. They're going to get new fans. And so all these other sports that could have been, you could have been in the shoes of, they're going to benefit from something that you didn't do. And that's start earlier. Figure out a plan to make sure you are on the field first before everybody else. I grew up around baseball. When I grew up in California, I had two minor league teams, the 66ers and the Quakes. The Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, and I grew up around both of those teams, so I grew up around baseball. I grew up, and I love the Dodgers, so I always follow the Dodgers, and I'm one of those fans that I dip in and out. You know, I follow the Dodgers, and, you know, throughout their season, I'll watch some Dodgers games when they're on primetime TV, but my focus is NBA. My focus is NFL. My focus is, you know, NHL and college football and college basketball. So my focuses are going all over the place. And I check in baseball during October sometimes when if the Dodgers are in the playoffs. And now all of a sudden you're going to have the whole regular season in this time span of where everybody's watching college football and the start of NBA and the start of NHL. And it's just they had an opportunity and I think they blew it.
Yeah, they definitely blew it. But this is also just a side effect of a lot of the problems they've had already. I mean, I grew up watching baseball. Baseball is the first sport I was introduced to because my dad is a lifelong baseball fan. The first sporting events I ever went to were Chattanooga Lookouts games, and I became a Cincinnati Reds fan from watching guys like Adam Dunn play in the minors. And the older I got, the more, I guess, disconnected I got with baseball despite playing baseball until I got in to about halfway through my high school career and I kind of switched to playing basketball. But it lost a lot of people that around that age, too. I mean, everyone that I played high school basketball with played baseball for a time when they just lost interest. I think that's just kind of the state of the game right now, too. And that's a problem the MLB's had is trying to fix that image of being boring and unlikable, as well as all like the cheating scandals they've had along with the 1994 strike. They've been battling an image issue for a long time, about 26 years now. They've kind of been battling that, and doesn't help too that they're not very active on social media. The MLB will take down highlights if you post them without consent at a much higher rate than someone like the NFL or NBA or even the NHL. They're so much better at marketing stars, and that has a huge thing to do with it too. I mean, even if you played, Ryan Porth made a good point this morning that even if you do play like a 60-game regular season and every game matters a whole lot more than it would in your traditional standard, you know, 162-game season, just because MLB doesn't, I guess, market their stars as well, they're going to have a hard time reaching younger audiences. They'll always have me because I've, like I said, lifelong baseball fan. They're always going to have, you know, me as an audience, even if they played a 25-game regular season and they only had pitchers hitting, I would still actually watch Major League Baseball. But it's not that way for a lot of people, and a lot of that's because the image that they've already put on themselves before all of this started, the blown opportunity of being able to start on July 4th and being able to play a good chunk or maybe half of an entire baseball season, and a lot of the other problems they've just been battling since 1994 with cheating scandals too. And who would have thought that no one cares about the Astros cheating or the Yankees potentially cheating as well with their own sign-stealing scandal because we're still talking about this.
Right, and I think you guys both make excellent points on your perspective, right? And it illustrates it. I think baseball, and it's their own fault, right? Their flaws get exacerbated because they shoot themselves in the foot a lot. They've actually had labor peace since 1994. That should be a good thing, but the sting of 1994 comes back up constantly because of what's going on right now. It's resurfaced, and so you have this stigma that they've had for a long time. And all of these other things they can't get to. And I think they've gotten very caught up in the fact that from a revenue standpoint, the game is at an all-time high. As Tyler points out, when you play 162 games in a year, you generate a lot of revenue. And they've gone worldwide in the places like in Japan and Dominican Republic and Venezuela. They've reached out globally. And they've got more people playing there. They're pulling from those areas. That has helped their revenue. But the bedrock here, they have allowed to, I think, erode some. And that's what concerns me. And so it comes up now when things are a critical time. But they won't be thinking about any of that today. I just hope that today they can come to agree. There's got to be some harmony. Right. If they go back into a hole and there's more animosity for the next couple of days, I just don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I don't.
I keep digging myself into my simulated games to try to escape. But man, my heart is on the verge of cracking.
When I got the notification yesterday, when I saw the tweet about okay, they're gonna agree to a proposal, so I'm like, okay,
right as we got off the air,
we got a step there. And remember, we didn't really overreact in the group chat once we sent it. We said, okay, that's step one. That's like one step. And then sure enough, here's their tweet. Oh, those reports are false. And then it's right back to that same disappointment again. I sent that same text about the season and them agreeing to a season to like multiple people who are baseball fans, and I can't tell you how many excitement gifts I got from them. And then I also sent them right after that, 10 minutes later, oh, those were false reports. And then the sadness in their text messages of like, man, I'm checked out. I'm burned out. Yeah. I don't know what they're doing. I don't care. I just want some baseball, and they're not giving it to me. So guess what? I'll just go watch something else.
That's where Tony Clark needs to step in and at least do what Rob Manfred has done, and that's show your face and explain yourself, not through just the Players Union's Twitter feed or the Twitter account. You have to be able to explain your side, why this fell through, despite Rob Manfred and MLB saying that there was some kind of agreement.
Absolutely.
This is where it's his turn to be able to have a rebuttal to that.
Because all fans are getting right now is Rob Manfred's perspective on everything that's going on. When we had Tony Kemp on yesterday, well, we had callers complaining about what Tony Kemp said about his play and taking less pay and everything that involves in it, but they only know the Rob Manfred side. If Tony Clark would come out and speak out for his players, then fans wouldn't be so confused about who should we really be pointing the finger at on why this season's not starting on time. Should we be pointing our fingers at the players who are refusing to take less money, or should we be pointing our fingers at the owners who are just being greedy and not giving up their money? Like, who should we be pointing the finger at? We're getting one side of the spectrum, and that's the owners and Rob Manfred. We're not getting Tony Clark. That's why he needs to get in front of a camera and speak up. Speak up for his players. I see Michelle Roberts on TV all the time, speaking up for the NBA and the NBAPA all the time. Chris Paul, too. They speak up for their players. I've seen them just amount of the same times as I've seen Adam Silver. So that's what it needs to be, so we can have some kind of control of like, okay, we need to be pointing the fingers at the owners. We need to be pointing the fingers at the players, or we're just going to point the finger at the entire MLB league.
Well, I think the ball is in Tony Clark's court, without question. I would love to see a press conference with Tony Clark and Rob Manfred. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, that would be great.
And here is the bottom line, right? If they have made the headway of, we're going to pay you the prorated salaries. Remember, we talked to Tony Kemp yesterday, a player, and that is what he made very clear, just like all the players we've had on through this process. They want to be paid the prorated salary. Every day that goes by, they're taking a pay cut. They just want to have their rate for however many games they play. They've made that clear, and it looks like they made a lot of headway on that last night. They're up to 60 games. If the players just want to try to push it a little further and try to negotiate, well, what about 70 games? Or what about 66?
Yeah.
They come at a compromise. I can live with that, but they can't have another several days of
arguing
that's not
about
what
money
we agreed on and arguing this and that. That's not what I said. I didn't agree. You know, we can't have that. We can't have that. We should be down to the last couple of things about the basic agreement of how many games we're going to play. Then you can get into all the safety protocols that you're going to have. That's where the NBA is right now, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show.
Yeah,
all right.
And so that's what's crazy, Willie, is like they're in phase one of negotiating. they're just negotiating like money and how to deal with all this. They haven't even thought about where we're going to play and how we're going to safety.
Well, they have, but they have to get into the key details, right? The devil's in the details. They have had some discussions. They feel like they've made progress on that, but you can only imagine when they really get down to the details, how much more arguing based on the relationship between the two sides, what potentially could happen there. I don't even want to think about that, but let's get the schedule out there first.
Absolutely.
Let's please get the schedule out there first. All right, we're going to switch topics when we come back. Adam Vingan is going to join us. We'll talk about the latest with the NHL and also some of the things that he's been writing about. The captain, Roman Josi, talked to the media yesterday. We played it for you on our show. The Norris Trophy, we'll get his thoughts on that. Also, what's going on with the expansion draft on the horizon? Adam Vingan will join us in our next segment. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.